All right, this last session. And then we got a couple speakers, and then we're going to end a good day. There's a man out of New York. His name was Samuel Schumacher, and he wrote this poem that I believe is reflective of the 12th step. It's called "I Stand at the Door." I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There is no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men, with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door as starving beggars die, on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter. Die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it, live because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it, and open it, and walk in, and find Him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in, go way down in the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements, of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthoods. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in, sometimes venture a little farther, but my place seems closer to the opening, so I stand by the door. There is another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid, lest God in the zeal of His house devour them. For God is so very great and asks all of us, and these people feel a cosmic claustrophobia and want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they are spoiled. For the old life, they have seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do any more. Somebody must be watching for these frightened who seek to sneak out just where they came in, to tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not see how near these are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too, I stand by the door. I admire the people who go all the way in, but I wish they wouldn't forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deeply and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place, near enough to God to hear Him and know He's there, but not so far from men as not to not hear them. And remember, they are there too. Where are these men? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them. But more important for me, one of them, two of them, maybe ten of them, whose hands I'm intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I'd rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door. I mean, if that's not the 12th step, I don't know what is. The 12th step in our big book, it's two 12th step calls, the Working with Others chapter. The 12th step has all three legacies in it. Having had a spiritual awakening, recovery, as the result of these steps, we carry this message to other alcoholics and addicts, service, and we practice these principles in all of our affairs. Unity. The process that we have laid out in front of us is it's a circular process, not linear. So everything you've been taught, if you're in the process, who in here is in the middle of working the steps right now? So you're not doing the work in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. What you're doing is prep work. The prep work to do the real work, which is when you sacrifice your personal time to show someone else how to live by using the 12 steps. Remember, Bill Wilson says it in his story. If we alcoholics and addicts fail to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life, How do we do that? Through work and self-sacrifice for others. We're not going to survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. It can't be put any simpler than that. Later on in the book, they call it immunity from the, nothing ensures immunity from the first drink like intensive work with other alcoholics and addicts. But this is an intoxicating experience to be a part of, right? Brandon is one of these guys that I don't really experience in him like a sponsee because we have been in each other's lives for so long. But I also know Brandon from 9 years ago, 8 years ago, and I know Brandon today. The only thing that explains the transformation is the power of God. And then I have another, guy, and another guy, and another guy. So when I, from time to time, not every time, but I'll get this pleasant thought of, like, Brandon, how he was, and Brandon now, and it's evidence, it's proof for me that God exists. Not only that, is every time I sit down with a new person, I am looking in the mirror. I am taken back to what it was like for me. And I don't know about you guys, but when I see new people, even if it's just like not even like real 12-step work, I'm just having a conversation with them about something they're struggling with, and there is this little voice in the back, I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to never go through what this kid's going through right now. I don't want anything to do with that. All right. So that's what's important, why it's important to put yourself in a position to carry this message. So... So I got something. Go ahead.
So what's in it for me? Right? That's what I always want to know. What's in it for me? That looks different today than it used to look. So, over the course of the last 2 days and watching people who I had a direct experience with them in getting them to where they are now, I've enjoyed all of the different speakers that we've had, but like the ones that I took part in, their experience intimately is fascinating. And then when I'm sitting in the back of the room and they're referring to a conversation that they had with their sponsor, and it like hits me of, oh, that was me. But it still feels like they're talking about the experience with their sponsor as if I'm observing the experience from outside of the experience, even though I was a participant to the experience. I don't know if you understand what I just said, but to where I'm involved in the process, but the process is not of me. It was just something that I'm observing. And to then, because it's not even a pride of like, I did that, like where you show your kids how to do something and it's like, and you see them doing it, and it's like, oh, look, I did that. I taught them that. It's more of a, it's like Tarek said, it's the experience of observing what God is capable of, okay? And so what's in it for me is that I get to watch this transformation that sometimes is baffling to observe. How did that guy that I experienced in week one turn into this guy, right? And so I've got, it was really cool because I did not get to observe an engagement party for one of the guys that called me his sponsor because I was at the wedding of another guy that called me his sponsor. And 1 year later, I'm at the other wedding, and now both of them are pregnant with their first child. And it's like, these two gentlemen, when I met them, were not capable of a relationship. And now they're bringing life into the world. So, I don't know who has kids in here, but like, the transformation that we get to see from our own kid being this little child growing into this minor, now teenagers, is fascinating. We get to play a part in that process and help cultivate them, and it's the coolest thing that you'll ever see until you become a sponsor. Because when you become a sponsor, the transformation doesn't take years. It takes weeks and months. And you get to experience other people. There's a guy sitting in this room that for, I don't know, I think a couple years, saw him come to the same meeting, and it was just like, he's not getting it. He's not getting it. He's trying. He's not getting it. And then one day, walks into a different meeting, and you look at him, and you're like, whoa, what happened to that guy? He's different. Something's changed, right? And I'm only on a periphery of this guy getting to watch his experience of when God starts working in his life and he starts to be open to it. And this is the thing that is the coolest thing that you'll ever see. I love the text messages I get from the guys that call me and their sponsors, where they're sitting down with a guy and they're like, holy crap, I just had this experience with this guy, right? And I get sent back into my early days of sobriety where everything was magical, right? Like all the coincidences that showed up were like, oh my God, you can't make this shit up. Listen to this connecting to this connecting to this. And I get to hear other people get fascinated by that experience in the beginning. And that is what is so cool. That's what's in it for me. That's why I like doing this stuff. Now, are we successful all the time? No. I today am not attending the funeral of a guy that was a drinking buddy of mine. I want to say it was 4 or 5 years ago, I got a phone call from the mother of my children, and she said that this guy was struggling with alcohol, and she asked if I could talk to him. And so I did a 12-step call over the phone while I was on a business retreat, and he was just like, I'm just not ready. It's just not that bad. And so then I see him at a Christmas party, and he's loving on me, and he's telling me how awesome the way of life that we get to live is, but, you know, I was just going through some stuff, And now that I'm through that stuff with work and everything, I'm fine and everything. And it's like, dude, you're so sloppy, you're not going to remember this conversation, right? And then that was a Christmas party. By the Super Bowl night, he's got a restraining order slapped on him because he didn't push her down the steps, but she fell down the steps. And so he gets a restraining order against him, and he's kicked out of the house and doesn't get to see his kids, right? Well, fast forward 6 months, 8 months, whatever it is, he's in a relationship. He's dating this girl that's got one of those crazy ex-boyfriends that comes in, kills his current girlfriend, kills himself. And so because my buddy had made this girl his god, he decides he doesn't want to live anymore, slits his throat and his wrist, bleeds out for 18 hours in a hotel room and doesn't die. Calls me from Peachford and is like, man, I do not want to experience that ever again. Talk to him on a Friday. I cancel everything I have on my calendar for Saturday. Go down there, go to a meeting with him, go to lunch, explain to him what's necessary under the steps. We get to the ninth step and he's like, I am never making amends to that bitch. So Friday night, willing to do anything, by Saturday at lunch, not making amends. You would think that at some point in time this guy's going to get a clue, right? Parks his car in some lady's living room, gets to go to jail for 6 months, comes out, he's doing good now. I get a phone call last Saturday. The mother of my children asked me, when's the last time I talked to this guy? And I said, shoot, I think Thanksgiving a year ago, I reached out to him and he texted me and he texted me back and told me, hey, if I don't see you, I hope your family has a wonderful holiday season. I'm like, hope? If I don't see you, I haven't seen you in 2 years, why would I see you? Well, she goes, okay, well, he's dead. I've got four guys that called me their sponsor that are dead. So there's that other side of things where these people that are in your life, they just can't quite connect. They can't quite hook up with it. And you get to experience that. And here's what's really fascinating to me is if you work the steps and you go on the spiritual path, all of that experience is neutral to you. I'm not sad. I'm not happy. It's just something I'm observing. And this is where, like, the practicing the principles part of the 12th step is fascinating to me, is that when you actually start to live this way, the things that happen to you in your life are so fascinating, and the existence that we're in is so fascinating, to where you seek and desire to go back through the steps. You seek and desire to practice the 10th step. You seek and desire to practice the 11th step because of the experience that you're having. But there's a reason why step 12 comes after steps 1 through 11. It's because you have to do all that other stuff back here to get here. And when you get here, the existence becomes so much more fascinating, to where it accelerates. And the acceleration of things is cool, because all the lessons that I've accumulated in nearly 8 years of sobriety, I've got guys that are now a year sober that are asking me questions that I didn't experience until year five of sobriety. And so if they desire it, they're getting all of my collective experience in a shorter time frame. So that means when they're at 8 years, they're going to be somewhere way the hell out there. So you want to transform the planet? You want to change the world? Just get sober and work the steps. Because what happens as a result of that, I was reflecting kind of last night, I think, of looking at the list of the people that are speaking here. And the majority of them are connected to one guy. This guy, Scott. Like, either they were sponsored by Scott, or they were sponsored by people that were sponsored by Scott, or connected to that in some sort of way. And it's just like, what made this weekend possible? Scott met Mark. And you're all here because of that. What happens to your life if you actually work this path and you start working with others? What is in the wake of your existence? The wake of my existence was chaos. Like, prior to getting sober, you turn around and look, and there's like broken shit, stuff on fire, and it's like, whoa. And now I like look at the experience of over the last year, 8 years behind me, and it's like, there's some really neat stuff. And what that does is it propels me forward to go more and deeper and to explore other practices and to explore all this stuff because of the experience of all the stuff behind me that I'm not even connected to anymore, because right now the coolest moment I have in my life is right now. But I get that. It's not some theory. It's like, this is awesome right here. I love it when people ask me, what did you do this weekend? I actually have to go back into my memory and go, let's see, because that was sometimes days ago. Somebody calls me and asks me, what are you doing? I tell them what I'm doing. I'm driving down the road, talking to you. My sister asked me one time, she's like, why do you do that? Like, why do I do what? She goes, why do you tell me actually what you're doing? I'm like, why'd you ask me what I was doing? This is what I'm doing. It's like Tarek was talking about the breath. Like, how many times are you aware of what you're actually doing, or are you just doing it? Wouldn't it be cool if you were aware of all of your thoughts that are constantly flowing through you, and that you're playing? And because my thoughts line up out the right side of my head, and they're kind of like little file folders, and I can go and play in the file folders and still talk to you. I'm doing it right now. There's only two right here right now. Third one just showed up. And so, this is where you get to get as a result of this spiritual exploration and working with other people. And I'm just kind of going all over the place, so I'm going to throw it back to you.
One of my favorite passages in the big book is on page 124, and I think it's another encapsulation of the 12th step. It says, Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. That is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. Let's assume our past is our struggle with alcoholism and or addiction. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. You know, some could say that way of life is an error we need to rectify because we caused a lot of harm. The addict and alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it is the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help by sharing the 12 steps is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past, the dark struggle with addiction and alcoholism is perhaps the greatest possession you have. There's an interesting contemplation. Is your struggle with alcoholism or addiction the greatest possession you have? The key to life and happiness for others. With your experience with addiction and alcoholism, you can avert death and misery for other people. I believe it's mandatory that we are able to convert that darkness into a jewel and give it some meaning. And is there a better way to give that struggle meaning than by using it to help save someone else's life? You know, I used to run a recovery program. This was one of the things I tried to drill into the heads of all the clients that came to my program, was to converting this liability, the greatest we've ever had, into an asset. But those are two dots that are seldom connected for whatever reason. But it's the most beautiful part of the whole journey. You know, to be able to go through, to go all the way to the gate of death, to go all the way to the gate of insanity, and you get brought back to tell your story. That's what we do here. We heal through telling stories. We are a storytelling society. That's how we heal. I know sometimes we try to shove the big book down people's throat. You know, I was guilty of it for many years. And I know that there is a very good chance if you work the 12 steps out as outlined in this big book, you will recover and stay recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But I like to think of it in terms of, why the hell did I go through all this if it's not to give it some purpose and some meaning? Right? And I'm very grateful and I'm very fortunate because I've been around long enough where I've seen a lot of people die. And I'm going to see a lot more people die. You know? Why I've remained willing for 11 years, 4 months, and 11 days fascinates me. It absolutely fascinates me because I see guys that can't stay willing for 7 days. That's not of me. So again, it's one of those things that I use as a piece of evidence that this was a gift that was given to me. And the way that I show my gratitude for this gift is I attempt to carry the message as often as possible. Now, I used to think the only way to carry the message was sponsoring someone. I don't believe that today. Not everyone that comes through our doors is meant to be a sponsor. You can find a niche to be of service, to be useful, because the worst place for an alcoholic and addict is useless. You got to find a way to feel useful here. And most of that comes through service. But you can sit down with another addict or alcoholic and share your darkness, share your struggle, and share your problems, and share your solution. Okay, when I went through this, This is sort of how I got through with it. And this is how it impacted me psychologically. This is how it impacted me spiritually. This is where my prayer and meditation got involved. I don't know what the conversation looks like, but I guarantee you when you get up from a conversation like that, you will feel useful. And you perhaps have carried a message to the person. Right? What do you guys think in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous? They met their sponsees once a week? No, some dude was sitting at St. Ignatius Hospital and they threw an army at him. They sent like 5 or 6 people to 12-step him. That's what working with others is about. It's 2 12-step calls. Your first visit and your second visit, these are the questions you have to ask. Maybe leave him his book. On the second visit, find out if he's willing to go through with the program of action. And they worked the steps really quickly. It was a team effort from what I've read. And so this has a team quality to it as well. Brandon is on my team, you know. He bats third or cleanup every night.
Well, and here's what's fascinating is because if you've wrecked a marriage and you've ruined every component of that marriage and now you have a marriage where with a different woman, and it's successful. Like I'm the right-handed pitcher. That's like, you got something going on with an ex-wife or stepkids or whatever. It's like, call Brandon. He's got the answer for you because like we learn through our network of the people that have the things. I get phone calls from like Birmingham and like Savannah and from all these places of a sponsee or a guy that Tarek knows and they're like, hey, I'm having trouble. The guy calls and says, so-and-so talked to Tarek and Tarek said that I was supposed to call you because I'm having trouble with my stepkids. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, they're not calling me because I have this magical experience where I'm going to give them perfect knowledge of how to deal with stepkids. It's like, okay, so here's how I wreck shit with my stepkids and how it is now, right? Is that experience of dealing with stepkids, dealing with your wife's ex-husband, dealing with former spouses that don't want to talk to you and want to argue with you and burn everything that you own? Yeah, call me. Because that's what I'm good at. So I don't know if it's third or fourth in the lineup, but it's definitely that specialty pitcher for that experience.
Oh, God. I was talking earlier about this jewel to give it meaning, our struggle with our alcoholism and or addiction. And I think one of the greatest gifts is what Brandon was describing earlier when we get to witness a recovery. Because we were talking outside earlier, and Dante's been doing this for 30 plus years. And, you know, granted, we go through these phases where, like, it seems like a group of 4 or 5 guys I'm working with are all getting it. But on average, for every 10 guys that I've sat with and tried to take through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think my 11 years indicates 1. Maybe 2 have a vital spiritual experience. And I can tell you that the ones that don't, rarely do they ever get to the 12th step in sponsorship. If they do, there's all kinds of other holes. They're lying about something in their lives. They're living a double life. They didn't make any amends. I can count on one hand how many times that's happened. Ryan, where are you at? I got to share the story. So Ryan and Ryan was tapping on the drums. I was like, you play drums? And then we started just talking, and he shared a story where he'd had an accident, and he was in therapy for 18 months, and he's a drummer. So he was going to have to, he learned how to drum with his left leg, and then the right leg came back, and it gave him like extra skills at being a drummer because now he had 2 working feet. And we were talking about taking a horrific experience, breaking his leg and the therapy and how it happened and everything. And it was the catalyst for something really cool. Right? Same thing here. Same thing here. I'm going to end with this. And every esoteric means it's not available to everybody for some reason. And for whatever reason, not everybody sponsors. I don't know if that's because the majority of people that maybe are in the rooms don't need the sponsor. I can't tell you why they don't sponsor. I know quite a few people that have stayed sober for many years. Maybe they don't have the degree of addiction that I have. I don't know the answer to the question. But I can tell you that everyone does not sponsor. In every esoteric doctrine, there are references to three degrees of faith. And you will find these degrees of faith within our rooms. These three degrees are known as the lore of certainty. The lore is like a story. The eye of certainty, imagine with your eye you see something. And the truth of certainty is that known. You know it. The knowingness of something. The difference between them is illustrated by taking the element fire to represent the divine magic that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous. The really good dope. All right? The lowest degree, that of the lore of certainty, belongs to those whose knowledge of the fire, the really good dope that happens when you watch a transformation of a guy you're taking through the steps, belongs to the one whose knowledge of this fire comes merely from hearing it described. You just hear people talk about it. Like those who received from Moses no more than tidings of the burning bush. The second degree, that eye of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of fire, that magic, the good dope, sponsorship, comes from seeing the light of its flames. You show up to the clubhouse early and you know somebody is hanging out working with their sponsee. You know, one of the reasons I love this meeting is if you come here like on a Thursday night, you know, the group that meets here on Thursday nights, every one of those rooms is going to be occupied with a sponsor and a sponsee. I don't see that a lot. But there are people who see that, and that's all they know of it. They hear about it. They see it. The highest degree, that of the truth of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of the fire comes from being burned in the fire. This ultimate possibility is represented in the above verse by the direct experience of those who are allowed to warm themselves at the fire. Be consumed in the fire. That's it. You can either hear people talk about the magic of sponsorship, you can see it with your eyes and never participate, or you can be burned in the flame. Because I was catapulted out of a rocket. Not as a result of working the steps, as a result of attempting to carry the message. Bad news is you don't get to deliver the message. Good news is you can always carry the message.
So... focusing on the practicing the principles component. Fascinated by the experience that I've had around this. So the people that probably experienced the most devastation as a result of my drinking were my parents and the mother of my children. Dad invested in a company and I ran into the ground through poor decision making and drinking. And then they were gracious enough to let me use their credit card because my financial collapse left me with no credit card. And then I intentionally, not entirely consciously, but ran up a bunch of debt on that credit card and then wouldn't pay it and felt as if I was justified in doing so because I took the brunt of the business failure and my brother made it out, got off scot-free. And then the wife that I just about terrorized in every way possible. These were the people that I devastated as a result of my alcoholism. And the way that I was acting. Made amends and things improved, but what's fascinating to me is what's happened over the last probably 2 years in those two relationships. Is my parents are getting older, they're having to change their way of life, they're making decisions financially that are changing. They ended up selling a property and making good money off of it, and there was the whole process of sales where my parents are consulting me because I have knowledge of real estate transactions, and I'm giving them advice, and they're asking me other questions about where they should move, and I feel like my brother and my sister are giving them advice based on what my brother and sister think is best for my brother and sister, not what's best for my parents. And I'm actually arguing the other side of, I don't care if this place costs more. I think it makes more sense for you guys to live there. Who cares about the investment for the kids? It doesn't matter. And my parents are seeking this counsel, and I'm the person that they've entrusted in making the decision when it comes to the end for them of what happens to them, because they feel like I can do that from a non-emotional state that is a wise decision, versus my brother and my sister aren't capable of that. The mother of my children, the woman that just assumed would have wanted me dead if she could have found a way to get some sort of financial settlement out of me dying rather than continuing for me to be alive. She now calls me seeking counsel in her relationships. She refers people to me that need help with alcoholism and drug addiction. We get to have honest conversations. Like, she sends me reimbursables for the prior month for the activities of my kids. And I get to ask her, do you need all this right now, or can I do it in like two installments, like one now and one 2 weeks from now, because I don't want to dip too far into my financial reserves? And she's like, well, if you could do this much and this much, it'd be helpful, but then you can wait 2 weeks. Okay, we can have these conversations in a way, because practicing the principles that this program teaches us, we're able to have... She doesn't view me as the guy that I used to be, because I've been living this path for 8 years. There's no emotional charge in the relationship anymore. It's friendly. It's cordial. She can blow up at me over something that one of the kids is doing, and I can say, have you considered to look at it from this perspective? These are the fruits of this program and this way of life, if we're willing to do it. Do they show up day one, day 10? Hell, it took like 4 years for her to get to that place with me. But if you continue on this path, it comes. And that's what hopefully we've done over the last 2 days, is to not only give you some practical elements of how to do this stuff, but also to pull you with a vision of what life can be if you actually do this for an extended period of time. I mean, in the back where they're talking about the real alcoholic, they talk about the promising career that the alcoholic or the addict has ahead of them, right? And the fact that so many people had always told me that I have a lot of potential, right? Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could actually start to live up to that potential a little bit? Wouldn't it be wonderful if life actually took on some new meaning and you started to exist in a way that made it fun and not miserable and a challenge every day? I'll close with this, because I had like 20 different things but I feel like this is the one I'm closing with, because it is. It's out of "He Sold Himself Short." Occasionally is accorded a few of us to watch something fine grow from a tiny kernel into something of gigantic goodness. Such has been my privilege both nationally and in my home city. From a mere handful in Akron, we have spread throughout the world. From a single member in the Chicago area commuting to Akron, we now exceed 6,000. I'm going to change this to it says these last 18 years. I'm going to change it to these last 8 years for me. I've been the happiest of my life. Trite though that statement may seem, the majority of those I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I only had I only had 3 years to live on the outside. The latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears of uncertainty of the earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient champion at the bit to conquer the world. I've stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but the tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weathered friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me up from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust, where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Thanks.